Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Good day to you, Ben. Good day to you. What are we talking about this week?
I don't know, Rick. Maybe I am day 7, 8. I have to check. Probably day 8 of COVID. So I am at home, obviously. I haven't been running, obviously. I've been wiped out. I mean, it's not a news story, but it's quite interesting to see that there's there's truth in there's truth in the tales and the impacts, because yeah, I've been pretty knocked out by it. So but on a COVID note, Rick, the researchers at the University of Nottingham are investigating the impact of COVID on the running community, and they're looking for runners of all levels to help us in participating in the study. So it'd be quite interesting, I think. The University of Nottingham have taken it on to see what the impact of the pandemic. Runningthrough.org is the website you can go to if you want to get involved. So you know, there might be some results from that which might shed some light on what it means to runners. But how are you?
Yeah, fine, mate. Been very lucky to avoid catching COVID this whole time. So yeah, very thankful for that. Yeah, back doing. You know, I've put together a few 14, 15 milers. No particular great pace going on, but yeah, nice to be running for like a couple of hours on the weekend, because that feels like that's for me is like a sort of proper long run outing.
We're gonna have to chat, Rick, about you. Your default mental reaction is to mention pace.
True.
As if that's a great quantifier. I feel like, you know, this is progress for the new year, Rick. We need to just remove that from you.
You're right. I think I'm still judging a run's success on speed to a certain extent, and that's not right.
Well, unless it's a race.
Unless it's a race, of course.
No, it definitely is.
No, it was good. It was really nice to be out there again, and I'm feeling I'm feeling good about just getting back to running a little bit. No particular competitive goals yet, but I do. I'm starting to miss not having a race in the diary. So I would love to be back doing it. Come the early summer would be great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the goal.
That sounds good. I would agree. I don't really want to train for anything over winter, if I'm brutally honest. I think I might just keep it low key. And then when the weather gets nice, maybe just like a end of year race.
Okay.
Maybe an autumn marathon.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots to be said for the autumn marathon, isn't there? Training over the summer, maybe. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Happy days with that.
Happy days.
Tell us about this person we've got on then.
Well, Rick, we've got the great mind of Josh Watson on the podcast this week. He's a trainer specialising in sort of movement and position and pain. And he does a lot of work in how the fundamentals of movement and how the body should hold itself, and how you can train to be in the correct position. And position in running is so important in terms of how to maximize on power and posture and things like that. So yeah, we've have a good chat with Josh about the body and how it moves and running and all those sorts of things, and some breathing, Rick, but not just breathing in and out and how to do that properly, but breathing and sort of like a skeletal, how it holds the body up kind of way. So there you go.
Well, look, let's usher this man in through the medium of great rock song.
Oh, great, great rock song.
Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio. part complete unknown.
Josh, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you.
Would you just give us a brief intro into who you are and the work that you do?
So I am a sports therapist. I'm based in Hertfordshire and I'm based in a CrossFit gym. So typical clientele are CrossFitters, obviously. Two main sort of streams of work I go down is treating people who are going through rehab and injury and then getting people to move better. So basically being in a CrossFit gym, the amount of variability we need for this sport is quite well suited for me being in here. And the two kind of go hand in hand with if we don't have enough movement in our bodies, then we're going to compensate a lot more. So two going hand in hand. I'm going down mobility route for some people, going down injury route, and some people it's a bit of both, just to make people move and feel better, basically.
And we always bang on about running being this sort of like primitive movement that everyone should be able to do. If you put your running hat on for a minute, what's the sort of how do you approach running as a set of movements?
So running is it's quite a simple movement when you think about it. But there's a lot of losses in range of motion that I pick up on when I'm assessing someone that will be quite detrimental to how they're going to be running and how efficient they're going to be running. If we think about running as like what's going on in the movement, there's just rotation going through the whole body. So if you think about the upper body, you've got one arm moving forward, one arm coming back. You've got the thorax or the rib cage rotating from one side to the other. The pelvis is shifting from one side. You've got one leg doing something in rotation compared to the other side. So if simply put, it's just rotation occurring everywhere. So when I'm assessing someone, how much rotation do they have in their body? And you can kind of pick this up if you're just going through a standard shoulder rotation assessment or hip rotation assessment. And you can just based on a couple of table tests, you can kind of predict how much rotation they're going to have and what their running or their gait cycle is actually going to be like. So really, we just need to add more rotation into our training and back into our lives. But apparently, we've lost all that. So this is why a lot of people struggle at running.
Right, I see. Not rotating.
Typical lifestyles.
Yeah, exactly. To be honest, that makes sense. I don't think of running as a rotational thing. So they, even off the top of my head, as someone who works in running, it's very linear most of the time, isn't it?
It is. Simply put, it is linear. But when you look at every joint moving through its full range, well, there's always an element of rotation happening everywhere throughout the body. So
there we go.
That's what people don't think about, I think.
Mm.
Is it quite common to not be sort of symmetrical when it comes to your ability to rotate? Would you often find someone who's much better rotating left than right or vice versa?
Yes. So no one is symmetrical on any assessment that I do, really. And this is because the body is naturally asymmetrical. If we think about the internal organs, we're not symmetrical inside. So that pattern portrays on the outside in terms of our structure as well. So everyone's going to have differences from side to side. Even if we're right hand dominant, right foot dominant, we're still going to have a similar pattern everywhere throughout the body. Asymmetry is normal. And I wouldn't think, I wouldn't try and be perfect and try and get everyone symmetrical when they're running. They just need as much range as they need to perform the efficient pattern when they're actually going through the gait cycle.
Is there a best way to prepare then? I mean, in terms of if someone was brand new to running or coming back from injury or that sort of thing, is there a sort of a best way to prepare the body for running?
Yeah, so I mean, if we break it down into the two crowds of people, running is obviously the most accessible sport we can all pick up on. So we get a wide range of people doing it. If we pick up on the more sedentary crowd who haven't done anything and it's like New Year's resolution, let's just get couch to 5K sort of thing. They just don't have enough stability within their system. And if we've got a lack of stability in the system, we're going to lose certain measurements throughout the body. So we're going to have a loss of movement variability as well. So for the sedentary crowd, I think just a basic level of strength training, going through the fundamental patterns and picking up on that, is going to add an element of restoring some movement back into their system and will pick up on some rotation and be more efficient in running in doing so. When it comes to people who are training all the time, I feel like they've got an underlying pattern which is not helping them run. So if I'm picky with who I'm seeing, let's just say someone in CrossFit, I don't see CrossFitters as the best runners because the sport that we do in CrossFit kind of pushes us into biasing other patterns and being strong in those. So we lose elements of rotation when we're training typical movements that we see in CrossFit. Think of something like a back squat or an overhead squat. It's the opposite kind of adaptation that we need to be able to run efficiently. So it depends who's in front of you, really. More sedentary people just need a lot more stability in their system. And someone who's training a lot needs to add a bit more variability and add some more rotational elements in their training to pick up on these losses of range of motion, which is going to be more efficient when they're actually running as well.
Could we quickly talk specifics then for the beginner? So this sort of rudimentary strength work, what kind of things are we talking about there?
So if I'm assessing someone, if I'm assessing their range of motion, I'm picking up on certain limitations there. They might have limitations in hip flexion. They might have a limitation in shoulder flexion. And what they're showing me is they've got a position where the whole body is moving forward in space. Don't know if you can picture that, but imagine someone standing up and they're kind of like bananaing forward. So they're bowing through their midline. And essentially, these people are falling forward. So if we think about running, we're trying to move forward. So it kind of makes sense that if we're falling forward, it's going to help us. But that can actually be kind of counterproductive as well. So if we push them back in space first, give them a bit more anterior chain work, a bit more core stability, it helps get a little bit more grounded and a bit more stable on our feet. That's going to pick up on some range of motion measurements, and we're going to pick up on a more efficient gait cycle for doing so. So if I can picture that, the most basic exercise that I feel like someone should be able to perform well is something like a low bear hold, where you're just driving your hands into the floor, the knees are just popped off the floor slightly, and you're just stabilizing in a nice brace position, just a static position, 30 second hold. And if you're doing that well with a really good exhale as well to make sure the ribs are in a good position, the pelvis is in a good position, that's just the basic movement I'd just assess someone on. Can they stabilize themselves, not even moving yet, before we even get into any kind of moving and stabilizing exercises?
An anterior chain is just is for lower back, glutes, hamstrings. That's the sort of thing you're talking about, really.
I'm thinking a posterior chain being like the spinal erectors, anything on the back side of the body that's going to squeeze us and push us back, pretty much. So I'm thinking more anterior chain. Yeah. Can we compress the front ribs and more abs? Can we tuck the pelvis a bit more? So maybe some more hamstrings in a posterior tilted position rather than anterior. And anything that's going to push us backwards in space. So anything like that involves reaching, if we're reaching forward, that's essentially pushing our rib cage backwards. So anything that's going to drive our orientation in space backwards, if that makes sense.
If anyone, we'll put a link to Josh's Insta bio in the description and stuff. But Josh, what's your handle on Instagram?
My handle is Josh D. Watson. It's just my name.
Go and have a look, because there's a lot of stuff that Josh references here that you'll probably explain on his Instagram. But certainly position is one thing that you're very interested in, and runners always talk about body position when we're doing it, but yours is sort of more of a training position, but the position of the body when you perform specific exercises. Just elaborate a little bit on that, if you don't mind, just in sort of like how intrinsically important position is to sort of developing and making progress.
Yeah, so if I, we'll talk about the pelvis. So most people know what anterior pelvic tilt is. It's basically when the pelvis moves forward in space and tips forward. That would be one position that we probably don't think is the most efficient position to be in when we're running. We want to train more on a posteriorly tilted pelvis, which is going to drive the anterior chain stuff I spoke about earlier. So more abs, more hamstrings. And if we are making sure when we're going through our exercise selection, we're selecting exercises that are influencing that position a bit more, it's going to shift our center of mass back, get us a bit more grounded, and provide us with a bit more stability, basically. So exercise selection is pretty crucial when it comes to being in the gym, as to what is going to apply better in running. So for a runner, I wouldn't probably say an overhead squat is going to be much use to them at all from a training perspective. But if we're picking a movement such as a front-loaded split squat, where we've got a little bit of rotation in there, we're driving the arms forward, we're reaching, we get a bit of abs in there, and we're thinking about a different position that we're kind of training in. So we want to train in these positions to eventually save them into our sort of everyday posture, and then we can move through that posture when it comes to running. It's kind of complex.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. But the fundamentals of basically replicating the movements of running in sort of static, well, not necessarily static, but replicating the movements of running in a refined way that targets the muscles or the sort of parts of the body that need conditioning. As you say, rather than just going to the gym and doing 10 lots of deadlifts or, you know, something very generic and leggy because you think like, I'm a runner, I need to train my legs. It's actually more like, actually, no, it needs to be like, as you say, a split squat weighted in this way to replicate the rotational forces and all those sorts of things.
Exactly that, yeah. When people are going to the gym, it's like their kind of first time. We've got a little bit of run in our system. We want to add a bit of strength to it. I think we end up picking the movements that we see are the traditional movements that we should pick. So we pick back squats, we pick bench press, and we pick deadlift. But in reality, they're not really the most beneficial exercises. They're going to help our way to run. They're just the movements we see, and then we try and progress those. But there's a lot more out there. It's just we don't get exposed to that. So yeah, exercise selection, and in that sense, what we're exposed to is not helping us.
How important, Josh, is the work kind of outside the gym? I guess I'm talking about maybe not when you're running, not when you're deliberately targeting anything in the gym, but actually just how you move in your everyday life, maybe how you sit, how you walk, all those sort of things that aren't very glamorous, but actually possibly we spend more of our time doing that than we do running or gym work. How big a role do they play in actually moving and getting the right position?
Yeah, so when it comes to, I guess, posture and sitting and kind of these low stimulus activities we're going throughout the day, I tend not too much put too much emphasis on them. I tend to think if we're going throughout our training, which is a higher stimulus, and we're going through the patterns that are going to replicate what we need, then because it's a higher stimulus, we should effectively save them patterns for when we're just sitting down having a chat here. A lot of people will talk about what's the best sitting posture. But to be honest, if you're feeling like you're having to worry about your sitting posture, maybe you need to reevaluate what you're training in the positions you're kind of pushing yourself into in training that are making you feel like that as well. So I don't tend to put too much emphasis on that. I think if we give it the right inputs in our training and not worry about all the other stuff, because that's just stressful. We don't want to be sitting at work thinking about what position I've got to sit in and I need to get up every couple of seconds to get some movement in. I just think if we train the system to move better in the first place, then I think that's going to be an easier route for people to go down.
Kind of, if you get the training right, then the other things will kind of fall into place around it, I guess.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about breathing, because I again, off the back of your Instagram and a post that you put up, you talk about breath work, and it can kind of almost immediately draw quite wishy-washy sort of holistic, possibly, like notions of, you know, in for five, out for six, and you're all good. But what you do in terms of working on breath, do you want to just like, and certainly how that the relationship between, say, like the rib cage and the rest of the body and how that affects movement, just elaborate a bit more on that.
Sure. So when I'm looking at breathing, I'm not really looking at someone and how effective they are for breathing in terms of how much inhale they're getting in and timing it or anything like that. I'm looking at it from what positions is someone in and how that position is affecting their breathing. So if we think about the rib cage, try and simplify this. If we've got someone who has got a large rib flare on the front, it's as if someone's behind them pushing them forward. So they've opened at the front, someone's compressing them in the back, they're squeezing their back in. That person will look like they've just taken a big breath of air in. So they're in a state of inhalation now. So that position alone is going to affect the way we're going to move. If we've got this rib flare at the front, we've got a loss of pressure at the front. So now we can't stabilize ourselves back in space, get nice and grounded and get stable again. So if that person is looking like they're in an inhale position, they're going to lose certain ranges of motion somewhere. And if we think about the respiratory side of it, when it comes to running, if they've got an inhaled rib cage, they probably can't exhale to get all the air out. So it's like when they exhale, they've probably still got a little bit left inside them. So you'll notice these people who have like an anterior rib cage on the front, a rib flare, they're going to struggle getting a good exhale in there. But if you're thinking from like a recovery standpoint, the position that the body is in has now affected oxygen intake. Because we can't efficiently get air in if we can't get it all out. So I'm looking from a perspective like, what positions is that person in? How is it going to affect their respiratory system? And then you can tie that into, if they're constantly in an inhale position, they're probably going to have a slightly high heart rate as well. Because when we inhale, our heart rate goes up, and when we exhale, it goes down. But these people are living in an inhale position. So that's the lens I'm looking at. Rather than kind of breathing itself, what position the body is in and how that's going to affect the way you're breathing and recovering in a workout, really, and the way you're going to move at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. Like if you're doing threshold work, absolutely. If you can't exhale like to your full capacity and you're trying to work at your uppermost aerobic limit, then you're not going to be able to push yourself as hard as you can because you can't effectively expel the air properly, correct?
Correct, yeah. And if we can't get a lot of air in, we think it's like we've got compression around the rib cage. So now we're going to get a loss in shoulder range of motion. And people don't think when it comes to running, well, how's the shoulder, you know, what do I need to think about shoulder rotation for? When I'm assessing shoulder rotation, I'm looking at how well the rib cage is moving pretty much. And when we're going through the gait cycle, we should be shifting from one side to the other. So we're getting this whole rotation element, like we said at the beginning. So these positions are going to affect us throughout the whole system globally, rather than just in one joint.
God, I've started to worry that I've got some kind of inhaled position. I'm just currently inhaled. What would cause that? And is it also, because obviously I think breath is like, it's kind of obviously tied in with like your mental state as well. Would you expect someone who's in that kind of position to be more like anxious or to find it harder to concentrate? Or do you not really go into that side of things, Josh?
I don't dive into that, but we always have a conversation about that. Because if I'm looking from an injury perspective, if someone has poor positions, they're not only going to load things differently, but they're going to probably have more stress running through the system. So if we can dial in positioning a bit more in training, we can have an effect on not just someone's position, not just their mobility, but you can have an effect on their respiratory system, their nervous system, their stress state, just by the way they're training and picking certain exercises as opposed to maybe what they were doing in the past. So it kind of ties in perfectly. If you're rehabbing an injury, you're trying to get someone to move better, and you're just trying to improve their just general lifestyle, and that can all be done by selecting the most efficient exercises based on who's in front of you, pretty much.
Does the same work then for sort of posture in the rounded back, sort of the hunched shoulders way? Is it the opposite of a flare then? Is it that the people aren't able to inhale enough?
That's like another layer going into it.
Right.
I think of the shoulders coming forward because we don't have expansion in the front upper chest. And a lot of people do kind of like, I mean, what would you say would be a normal drill to fix shoulders coming back? Just off the top of your head. Banded drills, right?
I'd think that resistance band behind the head, you know, like, yeah, yeah.
Rows, just endlessly like contracting the scap, trying to squeeze the ball behind in the middle of the back, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so you're focusing on the specific tissue. Again, it's a pull back. But if we think about the forward shoulder position, it's the underlying structure which is going to be the issue. So it's the ribcage positioning, which is dictating where the shoulders go into space. So actually, I think a banded pull apart is going to be less. I think you could actually be going backwards doing it.
Ooh.
Wow.
So okay. When you're fundamentally changing the sort of structure, how do you approach that then? Rather, you know, is it literally like lifting the chest? I'm sitting here doing loads of weird movements.
So if you sit there and you do a nice exhale, the ribs are going to close. Imagine there's an angle, that the angle underneath your rib cage, it's called the infrasternal angle. When we exhale, that should close down. If we maintain pressure there and then exhale in and try and keep the rib cage down, where's air going to go? It's going to pump somewhere else as opposed to the guy who's doing the belly breathing. So, and then we can pick exercises. Imagine we inverted someone, on like a decline bench press, we can then use gravity to favor chucking some airflow down into the upper ribs as well. So we can, it's like a whole nother conversation really, but we can pick positions. We can pick positions, making sure we've got a tight core. I hate saying the word core, but a tight core. And then we can drive certain measurements up and improvements in the ribcage positioning. But if you've got rib flare, you're probably not going to be able to move airflow around and pressure around the thorax as well anyway. So the first thing to do would be to close that ribcage down a little bit.
I think what Ben said about how breath work can sound like, it's slightly hard to pin down, and maybe people don't really think, you know, because you think, well, I can breathe, you know, how much is there to breathing? You know, what would you say the kind of the big benefits for learning to breathe well? Because I'm not sure it's an area that all runners yet kind of buy into.
Yeah, so I don't really think of it as learning to breathe in like a low stimulus setting. So I'm not thinking about sitting here now and going through some breathing drills. I'm thinking, can we find a position that we want to improve in, and then increase the intensity or increase the weight in that position to up the stimulus, and then learn to breathe throughout the position. So I'm thinking, can we resist fatigue in breathing in a certain position? Because we're always going to fall to the path of least resistance. And when we're fatiguing, we're just going to kind of fall forward in space because everything's knackered and our core's kind of fatigued. So we're just going to destabilize the system. So it's about trying to manage pressure within our system rather than thinking about breath work. So a lot of people think I'm doing like breath work with people, but we're just strength training and adding like a respiration element to it so we can position people better. That's all it is really. I don't really think about the specific breathing element, but rather let's train to breathe in a better position to make that our new bias, if that makes sense.
And is that because the diaphragm is a muscle essentially, right? So it's like any muscle, you train it, you can make it stronger.
Yeah, you can. And if you was on that, in that low bear hold position and done a full exhale, you're going to feel a ton of abs. And it's just everything compressing the rib cage or focusing on what the diaphragm is doing in conjunction with stabilizing the structure. So yeah, of course you can train it, yeah.
This is very general. And whenever we get a trainer on, or, you know, anyone, and we say, is there five things that everyone can do to, you know, taking that every single person is exactly the same. But we've talked about core and we've talked about certain, you know, muscle groups and things like that. Are there three exercises, and you've said about the bear hold, are there sort of things that everyone can do to prime their body before running?
So if we break it down into the two categories again, because I feel like the two categories need very different things. If we're going for the person who doesn't train a lot and they might have not had a lot of exposure in the gym, any type of crawling work is great. Because we're thinking about moving the ribcage back, we're reaching with the arms, we're thinking about the abs, we're trying to stabilize the system, thinking like a reverse bear crawl or something. Any type of traditional core exercise, but thinking about an exhalation as well, because you're going to, I mean, if you do a front plank and then add an element of just exhaling really well, you're going to find a better stimulus out of that. So it's just thinking about going through these traditional core exercises with a bit more intent sometimes. When it comes to the more trained person, I think we need to just reduce a lot of the bilateral work we're doing, because if we're trying to, you know, mimic running and the gait cycle, we're talking about more rotation. So a bilateral exercise, if that's 90% of our training, we need to kind of move towards more unilateral work and think about rotating, hip shifting, one arm reaching, one arm coming back. So just thinking about just mimicking a specific position in the gait cycle pretty much. And those people who are more trained tend to be stuck in a bilateral plane and they can't move in a transverse plane. So they can't move in rotation.
Yep, guilty.
we all do it. We've all just trained bilaterally, all, you know, for years when we first go to a gym as well.
So you're talking sort of like, again, with the you mentioned a split squat earlier, so sort of a split squat but with some rotation in there.
Yeah, and not everyone is going to be in a position where they can rotate straight away. That might be, there's a bit of a learning curve to that. But I'm thinking about if we're in a split squat and say we're holding a goblet position going down, if we have the left leg in front of us, the right shoulder is going to move forward and we're going to be shifting into that back left hip as well. So I'm thinking about shifting in the hip, moving in rotation in the rib cage, and just trying to add a little bit of an element in that. Stop being so rigid in our movements, I guess, and stop trying to stabilize a solid structure and just get a little bit more fluid throughout everything.
There we go, Rick. A bit more fluid, Rick. That's what we need.
A bit more fluid.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, yeah. I think I started doing a slightly more single leg strength work, very much like what Josh is saying, slightly more like specific to running. I find it made a huge difference actually. And it's not surprising when you kind of experience it, like running's a single leg activity pretty much, isn't it? You're kind of jumping from one leg to another, but
yeah,
it's very easy to get into the doing everything with two legs just because it's kind of, that's what you kind of...
That's the norm.
I don't know, it's the default, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's the default, exactly.
But even when we're doing the single leg stuff, we tend to still look very static and we look like we're moving forward still. But if we're thinking of why are we doing a unilateral exercise, we're trying to add some rotational element back into our system. So make sure you're going through that bit of rotation as well.
What about something like plyometrics, Josh? Is that something you you get into? It feels like it has an application to running, but I think a lot of people don't do it because it just feels a bit like, you know, one more thing that they should be doing.
Yeah, I mean that's further down the line. If they've got if they've picked up on enough range of motion, we'll kind of move to a lot more of a plyometric exercise. And you can think of like a single leg box step up. And then when you step up, shift the other leg up in a hip flexion, so the other knee's coming up, and then moving the arm with it as well. So it's like you're walking up the stairs pretty much. But a lot of people just step up onto the box and then step back down again. But I mean, we can add more to that and we can speed that up. But if we've got the position dialed in to start with, we'll be able to do plyometrics a little bit easier.
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah. That's the starting point, and then you can add weight and add dynamism as you go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I tend to think if we've got that position down to a T though, and we've picked up, you know, some of the rotational measurements back in the body, the running is going to be much more efficient anyway. You know, it's a quick sport. We shouldn't really be thinking so much about technique when we're doing it. I mean, we can obviously, but I tend to think we focus too much on technique, but people can't even move into positions yet. So it's like we're wasting our time trying to move people into somewhere they can't even get into. And then there's just a compensation going on. But if we just teach people how to move a little bit more efficiently, they're going to find that easier path anyway. You know, over a 10-minute run, they're going to fall into the easiest, most efficient way to do it, basically.
There you go. I think that's correct. I think about running too much when I'm running. So that might well be the thing that I need to stop doing.
I mean, I think for someone who's just going into running, you know, they don't really need to focus on technique. They just need to get the miles in to start with.
Yeah.
And then maybe add some element of strength training in there, which is going to pick up on some better movement qualities throughout the body. And then further down the line, you know, like maybe 6 months to a year, maybe dial in some technique with that. I just think we're wasting a bit of time if we dial in straight on technique when we're just literally learning how to run again sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Josh, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have some actual intelligent chat. Because normally it's just me and Rick and Jane talking nonsense.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Thanks for your time.
No problem. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. Huge thanks to our guest, Josh Watson, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to Runners World magazine on the internet, and then it will arrive at your house, and then you can read it.
What, the internet?
Yeah, well, you can read it on the internet too, but you can subscribe, and then the magazine will come to your house.
Oh, wow.
And then you can look online as well for great content. And then the next month, another issue will arrive. It's a very, very good system. just Google or Runners World UK subscription and you'll find it. It's on hearstmagazines.co.uk. It'll be one of the best decisions you've ever made in your life. You obviously listen to this podcast already, but you should tell all your friends to listen to it. And they can find it on Acast, iTunes, and all of their favourite podcast apps. Just search Runners World UK. Please subscribe. That's the best thing you can possibly do. Thank you for listening. And you won't see us, but you'll hear us again next week. I've always wondered about that. We always said, see you next week. We don't see any.
Is it just a phrase? Is it, you know, I know what you mean. It's not literally true,
is it? It's not literally true. So, you know, hear you again. You'll hear us again next week.
Does that sound weird? Hear us again next week.
Yeah, it sounds weird. I mean, but, you know.
Anyway. Yeah, we'll work it out.
We'll work it out.
Anyway, bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.